And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Save big money on your next project. Now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
AstronomyCast, episode 676, Other Things with Rings. Welcome to AstronomyCast, our weekly fact-based journey through the cosmos, where we help you understand not only what we know, but how we know what we know. I'm Fraser Cain, the publisher of Universe Today. With me is Dr. Pamela Gay, a senior scientist for the Planetary Science Institute and the director of CosmoQuest. Hey, Pamela, how you doing?
I am doing well, and I want to share news for folks who may not have stayed around for the very end of the episode. I am super pleased to say that we've had BetterHelp as a sponsor for months now, and we just added HelloFresh as an advertiser, and this means that we can afford to produce content for all of you out there who can't afford to become members of Patreon or just don't pay for content. There's folks like that out there.
Yeah.
But if you're out there going, hey, I'm a Patreon, well, we have an ad-free feed through Patreon just for you. So if you are someone who is also thinking, I would pay to get rid of these ads.
Right.
Because, like, I would pay to get rid of ads.
I pay to get rid of ads all the time. Yeah, I can't stand ads.
Just join our Patreon, $1 and up. Ads go away. And as you add larger amounts, like at $10, those are the names I read out at the end of the show. We love all of you equally, but we have to give you things to differentiate because that's how Patreon works. And we get it. We love all of you. And if you want to get rid of the ads,
you
never hear why I've used BetterHelp ever again. This is your opportunity.
Sounds good. Now, we spent a lot of time gushing about Saturn's rings, but there are other places with ring systems, and not just Jupiter and the ice giants, but asteroids, dwarf planets, centaurs, and even exoplanets. Today, let's gush about them. All right. My recommendations for telescopes really boil down to get Saturn and its rings into your eyeballs. That is into your brain. The whole reason to buy a telescope is to see Saturn with your own eyes and to see that magnificent ring system. Everything else is secondary, like science, seeing Jupiter.
You do need to be able to lift it. I add the caveat, buy a telescope that will let you see Saturn and that you can carry.
Yes, sure. Yeah. No, but all I'm saying is that the primary purpose of telescope technology since telescopes were first invented was for people to be able to see Saturn's rings. And then everything else is secondary. Like, if you're going to discover the age of the universe, that's fine, but have you seen Saturn's rings first?
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. I don't think anyone can argue with this. But, no. And we've known that there are rings at Jupiter, there's rings at Neptune. But there are other places with rings. So where do we want to start?
How we detect them? Because, like,
sure, yeah. How do we find rings?
Yeah, that was the thing that perplexed me.
Right? We look through our telescope at Saturn's rings, and that's how we see rings.
Yeah. So it turns out that, like, Saturn's rings were the first to ever be discovered. Those were found by Galileo, and then it wasn't until the 1900s that we found rings somewhere else, and it was Uranus where they were found next, because Uranus is the second largest set of rings in our solar system. And with these two sets of rings, it's very much a point and expose, 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 if you want to see the rings at Uranus. But that doesn't work if you're trying to find the rings around itty-bitty little tiny objects, especially the objects that are out beyond Jupiter and Saturn in our solar system. And it turns out we've found rings around objects as far away as, like, in our solar system, as far away as, like, Haumea, which is one of the dwarf planets that's out in the Kuiper Belt. And to do that, it hasn't been on purpose. And I love this.
Yes. Okay, so, like, we learned about Saturn's rings from Galileo.
We looked.
We learned about Uranus from looking. We learned about Jupiter, Neptune from looking.
Looking with closer satellites.
So the Voyagers helped us find them.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So what is the technique then? Let's say that you want to find out if an object out there has rings. What is the accident, the happy accident that you're trying to encourage?
It's called observing occultations. This is where an object, be it an asteroid, a planet, whatever, is seen to pass in front of a distant bright object. So the moon occults other planets on a regular basis, where you get these fabulous images of planet going behind the moon, and we can actually start to see mountains based on when the planet disappears. Well, if you have an asteroid that's going in front of a distant star, different observers on the planet will actually be able to see a slightly different alignment between how that asteroid and how that star pass together. And this tiny difference in geometry can allow us to measure the width of the asteroid at different points along the asteroid's body. We've talked about this in other episodes.
Yeah, I mean, this idea of occultation shows you how precise astronomy really is, because you have to be, like, the occultation is going to happen at a specific time that the asteroid is going to pass directly in front of the star, but it also has to happen in a specific place. There is this cone or some range on Earth where you're going to be lined up. And if you're in that range, then you will actually see the occultation. And if you're not, then it'll be partial or you'll miss it completely. So, there's times when, like, the moon will occult Saturn or Mars. But it's only visible to people who are in certain parts of the world. So, you know, this one's visible in South America. This one's visible in Chile, right?
And the way to think about it is, when you're on an airplane, you can look down and be like, that town, you can actively see the clouds pass over it. And each different house in the town will sample the shadow of a different part of that cloud.
Oh, that's such a great analogy.
And so this is the, you're under the shadow of the asteroid as cast by that star.
Right. And so, like, how did you see the shadow come on to your house? How quickly did it darken for you under that cloud as you were standing there looking at the sky? That's a great analogy. And so you get the shape of the asteroid purely through the occultation.
And it's just like you can get the shape of the cloud by combining with your neighbors all the times that you saw the shadow start and the shadow end. And you and your neighbors are probably not going to do that because, let's face it, you have better things to do in your life. Mm. But with asteroids, there's a dog to walk or something.
All right, okay.
But with asteroids, this is the only way we can measure their shape if they're not close enough to bounce a radar off of. And while measuring the shapes of asteroids at a whole variety of different locations throughout our solar systems, there have been a handful of times where they've gotten on object early because they are diligent and well-behaved scientists. Right. And they've seen this little dip that didn't go down far enough for it to actually be the asteroid unless they misplaced it. And I can just imagine that more than once this has led to an observer going, Did I calculate something wrong? And right. then the actual dip occurs, which is what you're waiting for. Star totally goes away. Okay, confirmation, life is fine. But then wait a half beat, and then there's another dip. And what they've been able to figure out is these dips correspond to rings around objects. And this has gotten us a whole new reason to be excited to go outside and do high-speed photometry of distant objects moving in front of more distant stars.
And, I mean, this is one of those fields that amateurs get involved in all the time.
Yes.
Like, if you yes. want to participate in science and you have a – it doesn't have to be a very big telescope, like an 8-inch telescope, as long yeah. as you've got the right detector system on your telescope, mm-hmm. you can at the appointed time watch the occultation, measure the brightness of the star, and then pass along the data to the scientists, and they will use that to help figure out the shape, figure out whether it has rings, figure out whether it has moons,
yeah.
and learn a lot more about the solar system purely through how the brightness of an asteroid dims, or how the brightness of a star dims momentarily. It's astonishing. All right, we're going to talk about this some more, but it's time for a break.
This episode of Astronomy Cast is sponsored by HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. And that's why it's America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/Astro50 and use code Astro50 for 50% off, plus your first box ships free. As listeners of this show know, I'm someone that worries about planets a lot and worries about our planet in particular. April is Earth Month, and HelloFresh is always committed to a cleaner planet. On average, HelloFresh meals have a 31% lower carbon footprint than the same meals made from supermarket ingredients. Plus, nearly all HelloFresh packaging materials are curbside recyclable in most areas of the U.S. And with HelloFresh, it's not just about packaging that is good for the environment. Good food is too precious to waste. HelloFresh's pre-portioned ingredients cut down on your food waste by at least 23% compared to grocery shopping, which is good for your wallet and the planet. My husband and I get meals for two, and the portions are just right. Although I have to admit, we sometimes go kind of non-traditional. The other night, we both cooked a different meal. I had the black bean and green pepper burritos, and he had the tortellini. And then we both had leftovers for lunch the next day. Perfect servings, no waste, and the kind of choice that let two picky eaters both find their joy, even if they couldn't agree. Oh, and HelloFresh also makes things specifically meant for lunch, breakfast, snacks, and more. Want to be kind to the world with how you eat? Go to HelloFresh.com/Astro50 and use code Astro50 for 50% off, plus your first box ships free.
And we're back. All right, so now we understand the technique. This is how astronomers find yes. things with rings. So let's talk about some of the actual discoveries that have been made.
So the first one that caught my attention, and this is like where the rabbit hole begins, was ESA's CHEOPS mission found a ring around the dwarf planet Quawar, which is one of the first objects to really start the discussion on displacing Pluto as a planet. This is a dwarf planet that is on a highly elliptical orbit. It was discovered in the early 2000s, and while watching it, they found a ring at a distance of about 7.5 of the radius of Quawar, which means how did they find stuff that didn't either coalesce into being a moon, dissipate away because it's not held so tightly, and smashing of the objects amongst themselves can make it go away or fall to the surface of the world. And once I saw this story, I started digging further into this, and it turns out that we have found, Haumea has a ring,
yep.
We found centaurs, and there is a strangely large number of objects that begin with the letter C. I don't know why. This is just weird reality.
If you want something to have rings, give it the name C and then just wait and someone will find rings.
Exactly. Yeah. This is how it works. And each of these discoveries within our solar system has over and over been a case of watching these occultations. And there have been times that we were like, okay, so what if we aren't seeing the rings because of some limitation? And for a long time, the abundance of tiny moons around Pluto had folks really worried that there could be a ring around Pluto that was going to attempt to eat the New Horizons spacecraft.
Right.
And as New Horizons got closer and closer, the realization was made, no rings at Pluto. We got this right. And so it turns out we have an exceptional ability to spot rings. And when we don't spot rings, we are actually not spotting rings.
One of the things that I find really exciting about the Quawar discovery, well, it's kind of two parts to it. One is that it was done with Cheops, which is not a ring-finding mission. Its job is to confirm exoplanet discoveries.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of going through the list of known exoplanets or candidate exoplanets and confirming whether or not they actually exist. But I guess they got this opportunity where an occultation was going to be visible to the spacecraft. And they thought, well, why not? Let's take a look, see what we see. And then the other part that's kind of amazing is that the size of the ring system is so much bigger than what anyone thought. And maybe even what anyone thought should be possible around an object. That it's like 7 times the radius away from the object itself. And that's really impressive that it's, you know, it's a dwarf planet, but it's holding on to this ring system quite far away from where it is. And that makes you wonder, like, how did it happen? Because you would expect it to be a lot closer. If it tore up a moon, it should be very close. And yet it's actually quite far away. Why?
And they had the same thing come up with observations of, and today is the day where I mispronounce objects. I am so sorry, everyone. Chiron and Chirilco, which are two more centaurs, they also found rings in these extraordinarily large orbits. And it looks like the objects that are in these rings may be having what's called elastic collisions. So when things come together, you can have an inelastic collision. This is like when two cars crash together and merge into a single, very destroyed new object. You can also have inelastic collisions, which is what we experience playing pools, where objects come together and they bounce off of each other and energy is just transformed between objects, but pool balls don't shatter into a million pieces, which is another thing that can happen when you have these collisions, is they can collide and energy gets turned into turning them into multiple objects flying in all directions.
So right.
If you have just the right kind of inelastic collision, they just bounce off of each other like the particles in our atmosphere. And just like our atmosphere doesn't settle to the floor of our house for many reasons, but one of those reasons is the motion of the particles that has this constant inelastic collisions going on allows the air to support itself. Pressure. It's our friend, and it could be these rings' friends.
Right. And the Chiron and Chirilco are centaurs. So for people who aren't familiar with that term, what are the centaurs?
So we have main belt asteroids that are located between Mars and Jupiter, and then we have centaurs, which have a variety of different orbits that are beyond Jupiter. And just to make things confusing, there are the Trojans that share the orbit with Jupiter, but in two blocks that we're sending Lucy to. So these centaurs, which are further out, are in temporary orbits, being so close to Jupiter and Saturn, their location isn't entirely stable. They have got there by something knocking them out of their happy existence in either the Kuiper Belt or the Oort cloud. They've migrated inwards. They're eventually going to either migrate further in, become comets, migrate further out, do whatever things do when they migrate further out. But these are really cool objects that we like to look at because, related to last week's episode, we sometimes see them having outbursts of activity where they suddenly get much more reflective because they expel clouds of dust and ice just like a comet would, but at a distance that isn't melting like a comet from the sun, but is instead triggered either by landslides or this transition from amorphous ice to crystalline ice. So looking at them, watching them in detail, super interesting to look for these outbursts. And in the process, we found rings. And I love when there's ancillary science nobody expected.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, at this point now, with four objects beyond the planets that contain rings, it just means that there's going to be lots and lots more of them. It's just a matter of timing of those occultations.
Yeah.
And when I think about upcoming missions like, or telescopes like Nancy Grace Roman, like Vera Rubin, you've got spacecraft that are designed to watch for changes in brightness. We should get a lot more found. And there's going to be some, I'm sure there's just going to be some amazing ones, like a comet, like a long period comet that's coming in and bringing a ring system with it. Will be really neat. All right. So we've talked about stuff that's in the solar system, but you know, when you think about science fiction, there are always these planets with ring systems, as if like there should be Saturns everywhere. So do we have any evidence that there are ring systems out there across the Milky Way?
Yes. Yes, there is, in fact, a super Saturn found orbiting the star J1407. It was found back in 2007. And this is a world that as it transits in front of its star, you get this really cool, complex dip that is from having a good old happy, not quite ice giant, bigger than ice giant, but not a hot Jupiter. I don't know what we're calling those anymore. And then this massive ring system that absolutely dwarfs what Saturn has. It was the ring system itself was found in 2012, and it consists of about 30 rings that are millions of kilometers in diameter. And I imagine sitting there at the telescope watching the data come in, and it's just like, okay, we're going to have to wait a while before this thing comes back around to confirm that, but dang.
Yeah.
It's like, really cool.
Like you're watching the flickering light of the planet or the flickering light of the star as the planet with this gigantic ring system is passing in front. Yeah, like I remember, it's like 200 times bigger than Saturn's rings.
Yeah.
Like maybe that is the real purpose of the telescope, is to look at this planet with its rings. That is the real reason the telescope was invented. And I'm sure the people who live at that star system are correct. Like they win in a ring down.
There's this fabulous quote from Matthew Kensworthy, who's a researcher at Leiden, who was one of the ones that made this discovery. And he writes, "The details that we see in the light curve, that's how the light goes up and down, are incredible. The eclipse lasted for several weeks, but you can see rapid changes on timescales of tens of minutes as a result of fine structure in the rings."
Wow.
The star is much too far away to observe the rings directly, but we could make a detailed model based on the rapid brightness variations in the star light passing through the ring system. If we could replace Saturn's rings with the rings of J1407b, they would easily be visible at night and many times larger than the full moon. I want that ring system. I want to live there.
Then the telescope would never even need to be invented. Because you could just look up with your eyeballs and see this enormous ring system, bigger than the moon.
I need a space artist who is not me, because I'm really bad at doing ranks. I need a space artist to, like, do what the sky would look like with, like, that hanging out near a crescent moon.
Well, people have done that. Like, have you seen simulations where people have put various moons in the sky, and if the moon was Jupiter, if the moon was Saturn, and you just see how ridiculous it would be as the thing rises up at the distance of the moon. Yeah, no, that would be very impressive. Yes, please. So, what will it take for us to find more ring systems around exoplanets? Like, this one is clearly bonkers extreme. So what would we be expecting to see? What's the best spacecraft that we have right now to find something like that?
So we can get lucky if there is a ring system that is somehow able to stay stable on a planet, on a small orbit, around one of the hot-ish Jupiters out there. I don't think dynamically a hot Jupiter can actually have rings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would have to be on a much faster orbit than what we're seeing with this J1407b. And that's because missions like TESS don't just linger for weeks on one field. They're like, okay, we're going to sit here for a bit, then we're going to come back. We're going to sit here for a bit, and then we're going to come back. And so, like, how do you differentiate between it being a variable star that's having a really weird dust explosion and a planet without having this extremely long duration light? And this is where I'm really looking forward to the day that we have cheaper 24-inch telescopes for amateurs. Like I want tomorrow's 24-inch telescopes to cost what the 8-inch telescopes cost when I was in high school.
Sure. Yes, please. But I can see that the irony is that the planets that are easiest to find are the hot Jupiters, are the ones that are close to their star. And when you're close to the star, I mean, like, here in the solar system, the frost line extends out halfway to the asteroid belt, so beyond Mars. Right. So you're not just finding exo-Earths. You're not just finding exo-Marses. You're finding exo-Jupiters, exo-Saturns. And those, when you think about how long it takes for Jupiter to make one pass, it's like 5 years. Saturn is like 11 years. And so you're having to wait a long time. So we just don't have the time scales to find regular-sized gas giants with ring systems yet. We just haven't been watching long enough and caught them.
Yeah. And the ring system that we see at Saturn is largely the kind of ring system you get from ice. And to get a ring system closer in, you have to have something that is rock. So you're looking at a moon that was disrupted. Mars is going to have that in its future. It's going to temporarily have a ring. You're looking at material splashed up during a collision. We temporarily had a ring after getting nailed by a Mars-sized object when the solar system was young. It's if you want to see something like this, you have to look at the distant objects. And this is where I want every amateur astronomer to have a 24-inch telescope that, after they're done taking their stunning astrophotography, or
of Saturn,
may there be exoplanets. Well, I mean, imagine this. You have someone out there who's doing 300 hours on the Witch Head Nebula, and there happens to be a star in that system that is undergoing this kind of a slow transit, where they're able to catch in the starlight while getting their gorgeous astrophotography
image.
Right,
so they could feed the photometric data of all of the stars to the astronomers,
yeah.
And they could dig through it. Yeah, that would be something. Yeah, so
I want that future.
Okay, all right. That sounds fun. All right, well, thanks, Pamela. That was great.
And thank you, everyone out in the audience. I am more than a little excited about anything that varies in brightness, and you have now shared my enthusiasm. And in particular, I would like to thank our patrons who are at the $10 and up level, David Everson, Michael Perchada, John Thies, Burry Gowan, Stephen Veit, Jordan Young, Jeanette Wink, Nano Flips, Andrew Palestra, Venkatesh Chari, Brian Cagle, David Trogue, Gerhold Schweitzer, David Buzz Parsect, Laura Kettleson, Robert Plasma, Les Howard, Jack Mudge, Joe Holstein, Alexis, Gordon Dewis, Richard Drum, Adam Ennis Brown, Frank Tippin, Greg Davis, William Andrews, and Gold. And if you too would like to get episodes without ads, join our Patreon at the $1 or up level. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye. Astronomy Cast is a joint product of Universe Today and the Planetary Science Institute. Astronomy Cast is released under a Creative Commons attribution license. So love it, share it, and remix it. But please credit it to our hosts, Fraser Cain and Dr. Pamela Gay. You can get more information on today's show topic on our website, astronomycast.com. This episode was brought to you thanks to our generous patrons on Patreon. If you want to help keep this show going, please consider joining our community at patreon.com/astronomycast. Not only do you help us pay our producers a fair wage, you will also get special access to content right in your inbox and invites to online events. We are so grateful to all of you who have joined our Patreon community already. Anyways, keep looking up. This has been Astronomy Cast.